50, or you can make your contribution online at WAMU.org. Another random thing about me, WAMU 88.5, I'm family friendly. The discourse you hear on me will always be civil. No need to rush the children into another room. Everyone can listen to me together. You won't have to suddenly cut off the radio because something is too risque for the ears of your children or any members of your family. That's one of the things we think you appreciate about public radio in general and about WAMU 88.5 in particular, that it is your source for civil discourse. So do the civil thing. Call us right now at 202-885-8850 or make your contribution online at WAMU.org. We are here for you every day. We don't come to you on a weekly basis or a monthly basis like your favorite news magazine might do, but you nevertheless pay for your favorite news magazine. We're asking for you to help to bring the programs that you have come to enjoy 24/7 to you on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, all day long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So please call now at 202-885-8850. As we said, this is our fourth day of our winter membership campaign. We only come to you twice a year, and you know for the rest of the year you will have no commercial interruption. You'll be able to listen to your programs all day long. So call us now. Our volunteers are standing by, 202-885-8850, or join us online at WAMU.org. And thank you.
WAMU 88.5 is giving away a pair of round-trip Club World business tickets to London, courtesy of British Airways. Plus, you'll receive a $1,250 Visa check card and a private tour and tea at the BBC. To enter, call 800-248-8850 or at WAMU.org.
From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Nandi Show. I'm Kojo Nandi. They're the tools that help us build our online digital personas. Welcome to Tech Tuesday. Social networking sites like Facebook, Flickr, and Twitter, the corners of cyberspace once inhabited by tech-savvy teens and college kids, now the favorite platforms for elected leaders, professional journalists, and people well into middle age and retirement. These sites make it easier than ever to post pictures and status updates to dozens, hundreds, even thousands of friends and coworkers. But what happens when those online missives end up causing real-world problems? When a partisan posting undermines a reporter's objectivity, or a picture of a dorm room party hurts your job prospects, or a careless tweet sinks a bold political maneuver. This Tech Tuesday, we're exploring what kinds of rules we should apply to our online personas. And joining us in the studio is Amanda Lenhart, Senior Research Specialist with the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Amanda, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Well, we want to hear what are your rules, those of you at home, for maintaining your social networking sites. How do you decide what to post on sites like Facebook? Do you steer clear of social networking sites altogether? Have you laid down rules for kids or family members? You can call us at 800-433-8850. That's 800-433-8850. Or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Joining us by telephone is Nancy Flynn, Executive Director of the ePolicy Institute. Nancy Flynn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo. It's nice to be with you again.
Thank you. There are very few rules on the World Wide Web. Nothing to stop you from posting those pictures or those random musings. What are the rules people should be imposing on themselves? Amanda, first you. If at one point these sites were hangouts for hip young people, today they're almost ubiquitous. And it seems like not participating is no longer a realistic option. Care to comment?
Absolutely. I think it's first important to kind of put it in a little bit of context.
Yes.
Most recently, we found in the research that we're doing at the Pew Internet Project that 35% of American adult internet users say they have a profile on an online social network. In comparison, 65% of American teenagers have a profile on a social networking site. So this is only going to get bigger. And over the past 4 years, we've actually seen a tremendous growth, a quadrupling in the number of people who use these sites. So it is something that's quite important and important to pay attention to. But it is incredibly important to participate as well. I mean, I think today we're going to talk about, you know, how to protect yourself and your privacy.
Sure.
But you also kind of need to be there, because if you're not there, other people are going to be there putting up information about you instead.
Nancy Flynn, how is this significantly different? When I started first accessing the internet, I guess in the early to mid 90s, there were chat rooms every place, and you went into chat rooms and had conversations with people you didn't know and people whose identities were often faked. Is social networking significantly different?
Well, social networking, when you look at it from the standpoint of the workplace, which is what we're doing at the ePolicy Institute, we're trying to help employers avoid risks, including litigation, that can be triggered by inappropriate social networking and the inappropriate posting of videos to YouTube, for example.
Sure.
And the problem with social networking is, while for many, many people it is a terrific and preferred way to communicate, far too many users forget that once you post that content online, whether it's text or photos or videos, that material is out of your control. You're not getting it back, and you can't control who ultimately sees it and how they respond to it. And what we're seeing is of course growing numbers of employers who are taking advantage of technology tools to monitor what their employees are doing, both in the blogosphere and on social networking sites. We're seeing prospective employers who are checking out Facebook and MySpace and other social networking sites before they hire people, because those pages on those social networking sites are where you reveal your true self. And in the current economy, I'm sure none of your listeners want to lose a job or miss out on being hired because of inappropriate content that they're posting on those sites.
You know, Nancy, we've talked in the past about workplace rules around things like email. How is a Facebook posting different from an email, and how is it similar?
It really is not different from email. It does create a record. And what we conduct a survey every year in conjunction with the American Management Association. And our most recent AMA ePolicy Institute survey says that of the 65% of companies who are using what are called URL blocks to stop employees from visiting the internet, 50% of those employers are concerned about what their employees are doing on social networking sites, and 18% are using URL blocks to stop employees from visiting the blogosphere. And the reason employers are so concerned about social networking sites and blogs is because of the tendency of employees to either accidentally or intentionally post confidential company information. Maybe you use your cell phone to take a photo of a room inside your corporation that the company simply doesn't want exposed to outsiders. Maybe you take some video of your manager misbehaving at the company Christmas party. Whatever it may be, if the company doesn't want it posted, that it can really create problems for the employee, who may end up terminated, and for the employer, who may end up in a workplace lawsuit or simply embarrassed when news of that inappropriate post hits the radio or the newspaper or the television.
Amanda Linhart, based on the statistics that you just rolled out about who is using social networking sites, what Nancy's talking about must pose a greater difficulty for younger people than it does for middle-aged people, because what I can see is that younger people who would be called digital natives, they're constantly updating their Facebook and their MySpace pages on a regular basis. So in the workplace, they're likely to have more problems.
That's true. You're absolutely right that young adults are the bulk of the users of social networking sites. And so certainly that is where they're going to get into trouble. But I think it's important to remember that social networking sites have a lot of really positive things to offer us, particularly when they're used in, let's take definitely Nancy's advice that, don't post stuff about your job. But I think there's a lot of personal information, a lot of ways of sharing ourselves that's quite positive and connects us to people that we want to be connected to. And so I think social networks do offer a lot of opportunity for creativity and self-expression. And I think that's why people, particularly young people, like them.
Amanda Lenhart is Senior Research Specialist with the Pew Internet and American Life Project. She joins us in the studio. Nancy Flynn is Executive Director of the ePolicy Institute. She joins us by telephone. Joining us in the studio is Alicia Shepard, who is the NPR Ombudsman. Lisa Shepard, good to see you again.
Nice to be here.
Lisa, as the Ombudsman at NPR, you're always keeping an eye on the fairness of network coverage and the work of journalists online and offline. Where does Facebook, for instance, fit into all of this?
Well, Facebook is a valuable tool for journalists, but it can also be problematic. One of the things that Facebook asks is for you to put down your political views, your religious views. So that is something that journalists absolutely should not do. I mean, one of the most important things for a journalist to do is to put forward an appearance of being impartial. And so you don't want to do anything or put anything in on Facebook or Twitter or on a blog that is going to show your hand, which is not to say you don't have your own personal beliefs, but it's really important to be impartial. I did some research before I came, and I thought one interesting thing that with the status updates, there was a reporter who was almost fired because she put on her status update what she was about to do with a story she was going to cover in a very competitive environment. So she tipped her hand to the competition, and so that's where it
blew up.
You
use a very radio-centric analogy, which works well, I guess, for everyone. Always remember the mics are always open.
Exactly. The Jesse Jackson incident where he was in a Fox News studio and made comments about Barack Obama.
What exactly did he say again?
I don't know. I'll let your listeners search. Try Google. But that after that, I thought, you know what? We live in a world where the mic is always on. And whether you're a student, a journalism student, or a reporter, or in some other profession, you have to assume that anything you put out there in public is going to be available, that whatever you say, we certainly had those examples during the campaign where Barack Obama said something at a fundraiser that a blogger picked up and put on about how people felt about their guns in Pennsylvania. So everybody has to assume the mic is always on.
Allow me to invite our listeners in on the conversation again. How do you decide what to post on sites like Facebook? Do you steer clear of social networking sites altogether? Have you laid down rules for kids or family members? 800-433-8850. Here's Zach in Herndon, Virginia. Zach, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Kojo, I just wanted to call and give a warning to anyone who uses Facebook that on top of thinking about what kind of material is going to be seen by people because it might be inappropriate or might be seen by an employer, you need to remember that Facebook's terms of service state that they own anything you post on their site. And after you leave Facebook, if you decide to close your profile, they also own that material.
I read an article to that effect recently and got a warning from several friends and colleagues about that. Obviously, that's one thing that people should be concerned about, right, Nancy?
Oh, absolutely. And, one thing I want to point out, Kojo, is I agree with Amanda and with Alicia that there are a lot of benefits that these sites offer. And certainly here at ePolicy Institute, we are not opposed to social networking sites or blogging. But you have to manage your risks, either as a parent or an individual or as an employer. And one thing that I would also point out to your listeners is if you are employed by a private employer as opposed to a government entity or a union, and you work in an employment at will state, which just about every state is, your boss can fire you for just about any reason as long as federal discrimination guidelines aren't violated. So if you have a social networking page or you operate a personal blog or you're posting videos to YouTube and your boss sees that content and doesn't like it, feels that it's contrary to the company mission or that it casts a bad light on the organization as a whole, or your boss just doesn't like what you have to say on your personal blog about butterflies, you can be fired. So, again, the bottom line is you don't want to be fired over a posting on the Internet.
Are you saying here that we should remember that the First Amendment only prevents the government from trying to control speech? It doesn't cover private employers?
Absolutely, and that's a really good good reminder for your listeners, Kojo. What we hear all the time from bloggers in particular is, hey, the First Amendment guarantees my freedom of speech. And sure, you can write anything you want, anytime you want, anywhere you want, about anyone you want, but you might end up unemployed as a result. And again, in the current economy, you surely do not want that to happen. So for adults who are either employed or are looking for work, again, you must be very cautious about your content. You have to think in terms of who else is going to read this. Is my boss potentially going to look at this? Is a potential recruiter going to look at this? Are my coworkers going to see it? And those are the big issues. And before you start typing, you have to edit yourself.
However, and Zach, thank you very much for your call. However, Lisa Shepherd, that free speech provision must be a pretty tricky one for journalists, isn't it?
I mean, I had no idea what Nancy just said, that if you like butterflies, that you could be fired. I would hope that's not the case.
That's happened, unfortunately.
That's actually happened?
There are so many bloggers who have been fired for their personal blogging at home that there's a term for it. It's called deuced. If you are fired for your personal blog content, you've been deuced. And again, if you're employed by a private company in an employment at will state, you can be fired for almost any reason. And if you operate a blog devoted to, we'll use butterflies again, and your boss happens to hate butterflies, you could end up out of work for that reason. And there have been a lot of bloggers who have lost their jobs over
because
what I'm sure they thought was pretty benign content.
Here's Amanda Lenhart. Amanda?
You know, I think this is great stuff. One of the things that I think it's important to remember here is that this is actually kind of hard for individuals to remember. And this is something I first saw in doing research on bloggers, but I think it absolutely applies here, is that it's often hard to remember and keep in your mind who is actually in the audience of the people who is looking at your material. With social networks, it's a little bit easier because, in theory, you've created a network of people who you believe are generally the people who are looking at your profile and the material that you post. For bloggers, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more open. But even when you do create that network, if you have 150 or 300 people on that network, sometimes you forget what's sort of existing out there at the edges of your network and who's really a part of it. And I think that's when a lot of users get into trouble. They have a certain particular group of people in their mind who they're communicating with. So, for instance, your friends as opposed to your boss or your potential boss or your mom. And the way you present yourself in real life is quite different to each of those groups of people. I'm different to my mom than I am to my boss and I am to my friends. And social networks don't really allow us to do that as easily as we do in real life.
Lisa Shepherd?
I just wanted to add that journalists really just need to think, if I put this on my Facebook page or my blog, would I put it on if I were a reporter for the Washington Post? That's how they should be thinking. And the other issue that they also have is joining groups. And the idea would be, if you are a national reporter, if you were covering the political campaign, you should join the Obama group and the McCain group. I mean, or if you cover the city council, you need to join all city council members' groups so as to not appear partial to one or the other. I know that, you might want to just monitor one group, but you have to think about who's paying attention to this.
Really?
Your goal is, hey, I want to follow what Barack Obama's doing. However, somebody else is going to say, well, she's pro Barack Obama.
Well, we'll be talking to a political leader from Maryland later in the discussion, and so we can talk some more about that. But what if a journalist says, look, my beat is to cover the mayor of Washington, D.C. And if I can friend the mayor, if I can be on the mayor's Facebook page and I can read what the mayor is writing on his wall, that may give me a step ahead
Absolutely.
Of other journalists. However, the mayor happens to be a Democrat. We can only have one mayor at a time. Is there a problem with that?
Well, obviously you can't friend the Republican mayor when there isn't one, but then you friend the whole city council. And you just and of course that would be part of your job to friend sources, but you have to always be careful. Could this somehow be embarrassing to me in some way? I mean, the idea is what Amanda said. You have to be thinking all the time, who else could be reading this?
Well, you teach a course at Georgetown, and you found that your students are posting information in interesting and in sometimes problematic ways.
Yes, I teach media ethics at Georgetown University, and I had, just in looking at Facebook, because I'm friends with my students, I noticed that one of them had a picture of Barack Obama when he was dressed in the garb from Kenya. And this had appeared as a story in the Washington Post, and she said, this is so unfair. They're trying to make him look a certain way, and now I like him even more. And I use that as an example in class. Yes, she's a journalism student right now, but she has to be very careful because other people are going to see that.
And, you know, the language itself has to be looked at pretty carefully. Not only do journalists have to look at it in terms of whether or not they're perceived to have bias, but we had a guest on the program who said, you know, I tried to friend my daughter and she wouldn't let me. And I was tempted to say, well, you're not her friend, you are her mother. But now we talk about friending as a part of this internet language of social networking.
Right.
And it doesn't mean necessarily that you are a friend of.
No. It means that you have access to their webpage.
Yeah. It's really a problem with the terminology. It's that the terminology isn't specific enough. It's not, friend doesn't capture all the relationships we have in our lives, but it's what we use to talk about our social networking lives.
Here's Pam in Richmond, Virginia. Pam, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I have a good friend who is an assistant principal, and her daughter and she were having a conversation about posting her information online. The mother is single. She's 50. She wants to develop relationships, and she wanted to post her profile so that she could meet eligible men. Her daughter cautioned her, Mom, please don't do that. And with her colleague, I suggested to her that she might want to do that because she could meet people. She lives in a small town, and she's not successful dating. How would you post your information online? What would be the what advice would you give her in terms of protecting herself
and her daughter, Amanda?
You know, it's a great question because there's a real tension there between wanting to be able to meet people and wanting to be findable, but also wanting to protect your privacy and protect information about yourself. I mean, I would say in those kinds of situations, and a default for a lot of people who aren't using these sites in professional ways, but who are using them for personal ways and want to meet new people, not just be findable by people who already know them from their real life, is, you know, put up information about yourself that gives a sense of who you are, but doesn't reveal where you are. And doesn't give information about how you can be physically found in space. So don't give your address. Probably don't put your phone number. The problem with all this is, of course, that all this information most likely exists about you on the internet anyway.
In the public realm. If you own a home someplace, I can go to a website and find exactly where you live and probably what your phone number is.
So what you're really doing is making it harder for people to put two and two together. But one of the issues about all this information that's about us on these sites and on the internet and on databases is that suddenly we're having this technology that can put it all together. We have, you know, computers that are powerful enough to be able to create a portrait of individual people by pulling together their information that exists in a lot of different places.
It's a Tech Tuesday conversation on social networking, hazards, and opportunities. We're going to take a short break. Pam, thank you very much for your call. We're going to come back and tell you about our winter membership campaign, and then we will rejoin our Tech Tuesday conversation. I'm Kojo Nandi.
C
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Washington Performing Arts Society, presenting pianist Leon Fleischer with the London Philharmonic, February 26th at the Music Center at Strathmore. Tickets at WPAS.org or 202-785-WPAS. From the Washington Teachers Union, committed to serving the 4,000 D.C. public school teachers, protecting their rights, and giving them a collective voice. More information is online at UnitedForDCKids.org.
Now, as much as ever, you can count on NPR and WAMU 88.5 for comprehensive national, international, and local news that connects you to your neighborhood and the world. Leanne Hansen here from NPR News. Weekend Edition is your source for the latest news, plus a world of ideas, books, arts, music, and don't forget Puzzle Master Will Shortz. It's news at a Sunday pace, but it only continues with your support. It costs WAMU over $1.6 million a year for NPR programming. Please consider the public service WAMU provides and support the station with a gift today at 800-248-8850 or online at WAMU.org. Now, more than ever, your support keeps WAMU 88.5 strong.
You're listening to us during the fourth day of our winter membership campaign. We have a goal this hour of $5,000, and we have every confidence that you will help us to meet that goal during the course of the hour. So we're asking you to call now, 202-885-8850. I hear the phone ringing. That is a good sign. An even better sign is to hear multiple phones ringing and our volunteers' voices in the background talking to you. So call now, 202-885-8850. Managing producer of the Kojo Nandi Show, Diane Vogel, is here. We have a goal of $5,000. Diane, are we meeting that goal?
I'm sorry to say, Kojo, every once in a while I have to correct you. We had a goal of $5,000.
They've upped the ante again.
They've upped the ante. We still have $1,500 to go on our $5,000 goal, but they said it is we're on such a good pace that the goal is now $6,000, Kojo.
Okay, then let's pick up the pace.
So
call
you
faster.
And I exactly have, about another 30 minutes to raise $2,589. And I know that you can do it. 202-885-8850, 202-885-8850. Whether you're giving $10 a month or a one-time gift of $50, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you support the value that you see in public radio. 202-885-8850 or online at WAMU.org.
You listen to WAMU 88.5 every day because you find something here that appeals to you. It's radio that appeals to your sense of wonder, to your love of learning. And now, well, here's one more appeal. Please consider becoming a member right now during this fundraising appeal. The money you give allows us to provide you with high-quality programs all year long. So please call now, 202-885-8850. That number, 202-885-8850. Keep our volunteers busy.
You know, Kojo, I think about Tech Tuesday, and I remember that it literally is 10 years ago, 1998, when you and I started Tech Tuesday, or actually the person, the executive producer before me. I was merely here and watching it happen. But so much has changed in Tech Tuesday. So much has changed in technology over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think you were talking about electric typewriters back then.
Exactly. And I remember how we used to have to say, the website is www.blah, blah, blah.
I don't have to say that anymore.
We used to have to say the URL. The URL is the address on the website. The website is the homepage. And we used to have to explain every sentence. Now, so many people are cutting edge, but Tech Tuesday is still here. Hopefully you've learned something from Tech Tuesday over the years. If you have, if you appreciate the computer guys or our conversations with the FCC, or you just think Kojo's fun, doesn't matter which reason you call. What matters is that you call now, 202-885-8850, 202-885-8850, or for you tech-savvy folks, surf over to WAMU.org. Check out our website and give your donation there.
Indeed, one of the interesting aspects of the conversation that we're having to do has to do with the emergence of social networking sites. And a whole lot of our listeners are now beginning to join those social networking sites. So we're trying to tell you what might be appropriate for you, the opportunities that are available to you on these networking sites, and some of the hazards of giving out too much information about yourself on those networking sites. If this is the kind of advice that you appreciate, please give us a call and become a member right now. 202-885-8850. That's 202-885-8850. Or you can join us online at WAMU.org.
We know that a lot of things are taking your attention these days, and that it's much better if you know how to plan for your budget rather than being surprised by a bill here or there. I know my husband was very happy to put us on the monthly heating plan where they average it out around the year so that you don't get the $400 bill in the middle of winter and the $80 or $30 bill in the middle of summer. But we can do the same for you. We can help you budget, and we can help you save money along the way. If you participate by donating $10 a month to WAMU, become a member at the $10 a month level, you not only get to the pride and joy, of course, of being a WAMU member, but you also get your member card, which gives you discounts at places to eat and other arts associations around the Washington area. It also, at $120, you can also get the radio bookmark, which Kojo loves, and he can tell you that it has more than paid him back.
King of the radio bookmark, that's me.
And it has more than paid him back in the gas he has saved so that he hasn't had to sit in his car listening to those driveway moments when he doesn't want to leave to hear the end of a story. He just clicks the radio bookmark. Later, when he gets a chance, he pops it into his computer and brings up the shows he wants to listen to. Anyway, $10 a month or $50 one time, whatever's right for you. 202-885-8850. 202-885-8850.
And here's number 12 in the 25 random things that you should know about me. WAMU 88.5. Want to know what I know about technology? Everything I learned from Tech Tuesday. That's the first thing I learned about technology. The second thing, go to WAMU.org and make your contribution right now. You can pledge online, something we were not able to do 15 or 16 years ago, but we do it on a regular basis now to make it more convenient for you. So either call 202-885-8850 or join us online at WAMU.org.
If you've ever listened online to the show, maybe you're listening online now. If you are, then you definitely, if you're not a member, you definitely should be a member. Maybe you've gone back and used the archives at some point. Maybe you've just said, I've got to do that one of these days. Regardless, we know that we provide a service that you rely on. And if WAMU wasn't here, you would miss it. In fact, you might be willing to pay 50 cents a day just to have it. Well, 50 cents a day works out to $180 a year, $15 per month. If you can do that, call now, even if you can just do 50. Whatever works for you, 202-885-8850. 202-885-8850.
Got an update on our goal for us there?
I do. I'm told that there is $1,889 to go to get to 6,000. So we're making a dent. We got about 700 during this time we've been talking, but we still need each individual. Don't let somebody else carry your weight. 202-885-8850. Kojo, I'm going to get out of your way. I'm going to let you go back
to
the conversation.
Well, you know we're involved in this for bragging rights, so please help us to exceed our goal this hour so we can sneer at everybody else. 202-885-8850.
And Kojo, I'm going to remind you that while you're on the air having your conversation here, WAMU listeners can go online and surf over to theconversation.wamu.org to continue this conversation about social networking. And I promise soon you'll be getting some tweets from Kojo as well.
202-885-8850, and thank you.
You've got a lot to keep track of these days, and getting bogged down by another bill shouldn't be one of them. The ease of automatic bill pay helps cut down on clutter and the hassle of filing and recycling all those bills. In the interest of ease and efficiency, WAMU 88.5 is happy to announce the Sustaining Membership Program. Choose any amount over $10 to be charged monthly to your credit card, and we'll take care of the rest. Your Sustaining Membership doesn't need to be renewed each year. It continues until you tell us to stop. This saves the time, money, and paper required to mail yearly renewal letters. It's quick, and it ensures that more of your donation goes directly where you want it, to pay for your favorite shows. Become a sustaining member now at 800-248-8850 or go online, WAMU.org.
Welcome back to this Tech Tuesday conversation on social networking, hazards, and opportunities with Alicia Seppard, NPR Ombudsman, Nancy Flynn, Executive Director of the ePolicy Institute, and Amanda Lenhart, Senior Research Specialist with the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Joining us now by telephone is Saqib Ali, who is a member of the Maryland House of Delegates. He represents District 39, Gaithersburg. Delegate Ali, thank you very much for joining us.
Kojo, thanks for having me on once again.
Saqib, it was one of those rare issues to bring Democratic and Republican politicians together in mutual outrage. Earlier this month, computer gurus told state senators and delegates in Annapolis that you could not use state computers to update your status on Facebook. Where did that rule come from, and what was the response to it?
Well, it's an interesting rule. Look, we're doing lots of very important work here in the Maryland General Assembly. We're dealing with, a great budget crisis. We're dealing with very serious issues like the death penalty and other serious funding issues that the Maryland residents of Maryland expect us to work on. But this was a very small tool. Facebook is a small tool that lots of us use, and it was a minor annoyance. What happened was the Office of Information Systems in the Maryland General Assembly issued a ruling saying that, you can't use Facebook anymore because they considered it a security risk. This ruling came out about 2 weeks ago. And very quickly, people started talking. Legislators started talking and complaining about it. I mean, just as soon as they blocked it, about three or four legislators came running into my office saying, "Listen, Ali, what are you going to do to fix this?" So, of course, I'm not in charge of the computer networks here in the General Assembly, but we started talking, and just everywhere I would go in the Assembly, members would come and say, "Hey, listen, I use it to talk to my constituents. I use it to keep in touch with family. I use it to post legislative issues and generate grassroots interest." And they've cut me off. So what happened, a putative protest movement formed on Facebook, interestingly enough. And somebody started a Facebook group saying, "Hey, let's try and get Facebook back in the Maryland General Assembly." And what happened is, after 2 days of existence, that group had about 300 members and numerous members of the Maryland General Assembly amongst them. And I heard that the leadership of the General Assembly started getting calls from the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and it started becoming a big issue. So very shortly after that, we got another message from the Office of Information Systems saying, well, they have found a way to eliminate the security risk posed by Facebook, and in a couple of days it was turned back on. And
were you informed of the way that was found to eliminate the security risk, or did you interpret that to mean, okay, we're going to forget about this rule?
Look, I'm not going to put words into anybody's mouth, but I'll just say they said that they're going to be running some virus scans overnight on our computers, and they explained some best practices on how not to get viruses and how to avoid phishing. So I respect them, and I take them for their word.
Lisa Shepherd, the similarities between politicians and journalists strikes me here because they share a common goal of getting our message out on a variety of different platforms.
Right, right.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why legislators in Maryland wanted Facebook and why journalists would also want to be able to use it.
Well, journalists use it for promotional reasons, i.e. here's this story I wrote, but they also use it as a reporting tool to, the most famous case was during Virginia Tech, the massacre there, that a lot of reporters used Facebook to get in touch with students who knew students who'd been killed.
Yeah, and
I'm sorry. I was about to bring Nancy in this discussion.
Well, the recent plane, the plane crashed into the Hudson, that was first reported on Twitter, of all places. Yeah. So this is not some. I mean, look, this stuff can be used frivolously, and it can be a time sink, and it can be non-serious. But it can be used for, you know, very legitimate purposes.
Nancy and Amanda Linhart, are the workplace rules different when an employee is expected to communicate with the general public in a variety of forums using a variety of platforms?
Well, this is Nancy, and
yeah.
I'll just say that, you know, we are seeing growing numbers of organizations that are putting written rules and policies in place to govern employees' use of social networking and blogs and other tools. And in fact, there's been such a growth in this area. I have a brand new edition of my book, The E-Policy Handbook, out that spells out specifically for employers what type of policies and rules you want to put into place if you're going to allow employees to access their social networking pages during the day, or if you're going to block them from doing it. You need to put these rules in writing, regardless of whether you provide access or not. And the other thing employers should do, in addition to having the specific rules about what type of content is allowed and banned, what type of language should be used, are employees allowed to use their company-provided cell phones to upload photos or videos online? And you also want to put some guidelines in place addressing what's called netiquette or electronic etiquette. You want to make sure your employees are maintaining a civil business behavior if they're using company computers to communicate electronically via social networking, blogs, or any other means.
Okay, stop putting ideas in my boss's head.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, and this is what everybody needs to remember, social networking for a lot of people is a lot of fun. It's a way to connect with a lot of people. A lot of people foolishly believe it's personal communication, and as Amanda mentioned earlier, that you can control who reads it. But at the end of the day, these tools carry with them an enormous amount of risk.
Couple of questions for you. Well, first let me go to Jamie in Chevy Chase. I think this is for you, Amanda Linhart. But Jamie, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I've been a privacy officer, and I kind of grapple with these issues as a lawyer. And I have a, kind of an observation. I'd love to hear the comment on it. If posting now, when it used to be a post was an electronic communication, if posting sounds to be the equivalent of publishing, where the speaker's communication is no longer point-to-point. In fact, it's preserved, as the other commentator noted, it's preserved at Facebook. I don't even have a legal title to my postings there. Is it fair to have employers have the rights that I think the lady from the E-Policy Institute has pointed to? And I've advised employers. I'm on both sides of this. I advise individuals and companies. Is it wise for employers to have such power over the content of speech when we've transformed speech from being a point-to-point posting or a semi-private communication to becoming a public utterance that is archived, kept forever, and then we get judged by it? You know, maybe we, as the social networking movement comes of age, we have to look at the appropriateness of employers judging our behavior in areas they never would have learned about but for the new medium.
Allow me to have both Amanda and Nancy respond to that. Amanda?
Sure. I mean, I think you're, you know, Jamie is highlighting a really great question. As the technology moves forward, many of the old laws and the old ways that we had established to help us understand and regulate people in the workplace and in the workspace don't really apply anymore. And I agree that I think there's ways to approach your employees. There's ways to approach these tools, which are both sort of can be quite controlling. But there's also, I think, real utility in a lot of these tools that that sometimes I think employers in their rush to protect themselves from liability or embarrassment are also quashing really positive uses of these technologies. Again, I mean, I don't want to sound like the Pollyanna of the internet or social networking, but for instance, I know that in my own work, I use Twitter and I use social networking as a way to feed information out to people in a way that's positive. And sure, I think very carefully about what I put on those media now, and I don't use them in as much of a personal way as I used to, but they're a very useful dissemination tool. And,
of course, journalists can post something and find a source, but Nancy, you wanted to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to bear in mind the reality. And the reality is that the way the laws currently stand, if a company operates a business blog and you have employees who are posting content and you allow customers or other third parties to post content, you may be deemed as a publisher. And if you're deemed to be a publisher and that content is in some way disparaging or otherwise in violation of the law, you can face some pretty stiff penalties. Now, that said, the other thing I'd point out is, for those who think that I'm kind of a killjoy about all this, no company would publish an annual report without having both the marketing team and the legal team very carefully read that content and vet it. And any content that a company posts or allows employees to post electronically also needs to be very carefully eyeballed by somebody who has the best interest of the company in mind. I mean, it's just a simple reality that in the workplace there have to be rules and policies.
Allow me to say that you sound as if you're saying that any company, when you use the term, needs to have eyeballed anything that essentially goes out in its name. That means that every tweet, every email, every blog, every Facebook posting should go through the company's legal advisors before you hit the send button.
I believe if you're operating a business blog or a business social networking page, you definitely want to have that content vetted before it goes out. We do look at employee email. The majority of employers are taking advantage of monitoring and filtering technology to take a look at the messages that are leaving their system, coming into their system, and being transmitted internally. And employers have the legal right to do that. Most employers have an authorized person posting content on the company website. They're not allowing just anybody.
We're running out of time pretty quickly. I'd like to get Lisa Shepherd in on this.
I wanted to add, I think why this conversation is so important and why people should donate to WAMU is because we're thinking about this, and that's what we need to do. People need to think about it. It was reflexive. Facebook has been around for 5 or 6 years, and it was fun. At NPR, there was an issue where some of the overenthusiastic staffers started a morning edition Facebook page. They didn't ask. They didn't check with management. They thought they were doing something good, but that's really the equivalent of putting a billboard up. What I notice with journalists or journalism organizations is they need to update their ethics code. They need to bring in what the rules are and aren't for using social media, because really, you know, our physical presence is now really more anonymous than our digital presence.
Well, you know, you might think that elected leaders would post pretty bland things about themselves online, trying to make sure they don't offend anyone. However, Saqib Ali, your wall often heads in a different direction. Things like Saqib likes puppies, or Saqib thinks America is the greatest country in the world, and some of the latest greatest hits. Saqib is trying to kill romance, spending Valentine's Day with in-laws. Saqib thinks fairy tales contain too many allusions to romantic adult behavior for a 2-year-old. Explain yourself, please, Delegate Ali.
Well, look, you know, I'm a human being just like everybody else, and I did start off with, you know, Saqib likes puppies, Saqib's doing this work or that work legislatively, and it was just boring, you know? And so I said, first, it was going to be strictly political. Then I realized how boring that would be, so I started putting just more personal stuff, such as, you know, pictures of my daughter, videos of me playing, you know, family photos, these kinds of things, and I just let it become a window into me. And, you know, when I think some random crazy thought, sometimes I'll put it out there. I make sure it's not offensive. I make sure I run it by, you know, I vet it through my wife and through a few other people. I'm a human being just like everybody else, and I think people appreciate that. And they get to know me as a result. They don't always agree with me. But I also use it as a platform to publish my legislation. So when people know me and they get to see my legislation, they say, hey, you know, you're a regular guy just like us, and you're working in the legislature for us. You know, I think I like you.
And I'm afraid that's about all the time we have. We end on a rather light note on what is clearly a serious issue on this Tech Tuesday. Saqib Ali is a member of the Maryland House of Delegates. Thank you very much for joining us, Saqib.
See you, Kojo. Thanks a lot. Have me back.
Nancy Flynn is Executive Director of the ePolicy Institute. Nancy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Lisa Shepherd is NBR Ombudsman. Thank you.
Good to be here.
And Amanda Lenhardt, a senior research specialist with the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Thank you.
Thanks, Kojo.
And thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the German Embassy and the German Information Center, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe, on the web at germany.info. From Dell Web, celebrating new beginnings with an event from February 20th through the 22nd, offering resort-style amenities and a variety of homes for the active adult lifestyle. More at dellweb.com, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Now, as much as ever, you can count on WAMU 88.5 and NPR News for stories that educate, inform, inspire, and connect. Scott Simon here from NPR News. Consider how often you listen to WAMU each week and why. No matter what's in the news, you'll hear fair-minded, balanced coverage, stories about the climate, education, healthcare, the White House, analysis from Daniel Shore, stories on arts and entertainment. But this all doesn't work without you. It's the investment of listeners who value WAMU's public service mission that keeps the station strong for everyone. So please invest today by making a contribution at 800-248-8850 or online at WAMU.org. Now, more than ever, your support keeps WAMU 88.5 strong.
We'll talk later.
And we certainly do appreciate your support, so allow me to begin with a thank you to those of you who have already contributed, who have already become members. Now, for the rest of you, the number to call is 202-885-8850, 202-885-8850, or you can join us online at WAMU.org. In case you're just joining us, this is the fourth day of WAMU 88.5's winter membership campaign, and joining me in the studio is Diane Vogel. Diane, how are we doing?
We're doing well, Kojo. We surpassed our first goal, if you remember, fairly
yes.
early. They booted us up to a $6,000 goal, and now they have booted us up to an $8,000 goal. And we have $780 to go to an $8,000 goal, but we can do it. I know that WAMU Tech Tuesday listeners are particularly aware of the good value that they get for their money when they tune into WAMU, whether it's now or Morning Edition, whether you do a $10 a month donation or a one-time $50 check. If you can do $1,000, that's just $83 a month. Some people can do that. That would be terrific. 202-885-8850 or WAMU.org.
Among the 25 random things about me at WAMU 88.5, I'm never in a hurry. The stories and the conversations I carry on these airways are not rushed, so before you can get the gist, it's gone, like some other radio stations. I know you want an in-depth look so you can understand the issues fully. And even though I'm never in a hurry, I can still turn on a dime. So if there's breaking news, I'll let you know about it, and we can return to the conversation. You won't be left out of the loop. If the president slips on a banana peel, well,
you'll
probably we won't interrupt the broadcast for that. But if there's anything more serious, we'll be certain to let you know. And we think that that's one of the reasons you listen to WAMU 88.5, because you not only get in-depth conversation and civil discourse, you're kept updated on news, traffic, and weather as you may need at any particular time. So become a member now. Call us at 202-885-8850 or join us online at WAMU.org.
And Kojo, when we started this process of Tech Tuesdays 10 years ago, cell phones were not ubiquitous. The internet was not ubiquitous. iPods, PDAs. These days, everybody's got one of these things, and often more than one. And you know,
we're thinking of changing the name of Tech Tuesday to Everyday Life.
Exactly. And you know how everything demands your attention. You know, the